So in this beautiful text called Manashodhanam, we are doing verse number 7, which is on page 16. So page 16 is verse number 7, which talks about the techniques or the prerequisites to get the mind purified. Because without a pure mind, any progress in spirituality is not possible. You say, I sit for meditation and my mind wanders. The teacher says, purify your mind. You say, when I deal with people, I have so many problems and I have so many difficulties and I cannot concentrate. They say, purify your mind. Even for worldly success, some amount of mental purity is essential. Otherwise, worldly success is not possible. We have heard in the past few weeks what is mental purification and what are the impurities in the mind. We have talked about the impurities are the negative qualities and the agitation and the disturbances of the mind that come from within. And the combination of these two, a person whose mind is very disturbed, agitated, and at the same time filled with negativity like anger, greed, jealousy, that's a lethal combination, and such a person cannot progress spiritually. So in verse number 7, there are 6 techniques which have been given as a preparation or a means to purify the mind. So when you practice these, your mind is on the path of purification. And last week, we had talked about the rituals and the worship, where we had said worship should be done with the idea that not only to worship the Lord in the church or the temple, but also to see Him in all beings. And the service of all beings with the idea of with humility and lack of ego is the main way to worship. That's what pleases the Lord, is when you see the Lord everywhere and serve the Lord. And second, we had talked about charity and about the ways of charity, how you can give, better way to give, where it is given unselfishly without any expectation. The middle way, where the charity is given but with the idea that I should become famous and I should get something in return. And then the lowest is, of course, where you give something to somebody and insult that person or give it to a wrong person doing wrong things, you know, like somebody drinking and all, and you give him money. So these we had already talked about. So today we'll try to cover these 4 other methods or techniques for mental purification, which has been told by all the wise people. We can chant verse number 7 again. Manashuddhi karaniha sadhanani vadantiha yajnyo danam tapaschaiva japastirtham vratastatha. So it says, for purification of the mind, it has been said that there are 6 techniques. Yajna, which is worship, dana, which we talked about charity, tapas, which means austerity, japa means chanting, Tirtha means pilgrimage, and then 6th is vrata or vows. So austerity or tapas, some amount of self-control and some amount of physical and mental control and application is very necessary for anything, even for a scientist or even for a engineer, you know, building a dam, or even a politician who is standing for election. So similarly, in spirituality, one has to have some amount of self-control. And there are different methods, you know, like getting up in the morning for meditation or for prayer, reducing the time that I would spend in useless pursuits, maybe just talking on the phone or watching, just flipping channels, or just talking on the phone for long hours, or just reading, you know, useless stuff in the internet or the newspaper or the magazines. And then the what time that you save you spend that time in spiritual evolution, in spiritual progress, doing things. So getting up in the morning, maybe some amount of, even if it involves some amount of physical discomfort, you know, going through that. People sometimes fast, you know, where one day a week they will fast, or they will only drink liquids or only have fruit. Or like the people fast during Easter, you know, for that whole month, or Muslims during the Ramadan, or Hindus fast on the 11th day, Ekadashi, or, and then sometimes like days like Mahashivratri, where they stay up all night, and all night they are chanting the name of the Lord or thinking. So some amount of physical self-control, and even if it involves some discomfort, you know, things that I normally enjoy doing, okay, I have to give it up. And, you know, it's okay. But what happens, the problem with that is that it has to be done with the right attitude, that when I am withdrawing from things that I normally enjoy doing, then that spare time I have, I must spend in the spiritual path. If I have, you know, given up certain pleasurable activities, then when I'm given up, then it should not be with the attitude, oh, you know, all the time I'm fasting, but all day I'm thinking about food. Oh, you know, I'm not eating, I'm hungry. Then, you know, the fast is of no use. When I'm fasting, then I should be thinking about more about the Lord, that it is for Him or for my spiritual growth that I have given up. But the problem comes when this austerity, the tapas becomes very rigorous. And, you know, like the monks, they sit in for hours, sometimes for meditation. They sit maybe on a hard surface. And the monks, they live, and the nuns, we find they live in, you know, relative poverty and give up all their worldly possessions. And that is all good. You know, they sleep on a hard bed, and they eat the minimum of food, and they eat simple food. All those things are good, because what that does is it takes your mind away from worldly desires and takes it towards the higher. But when this becomes excessive, you know, where they have instances of people standing on one leg, or they have been instances of people torturing their body where they have become just mere skeletons, not eating at all. Even in Buddha's life, we find that there was a period of time where for a few years he was extremely torturing his body, not eating or drinking anything, not eating for weeks and months, drinking minimal amount till he became a skeleton. He thought that vigorous penance, you know, would attain realization. And people have that impression, and even in our scriptures, they describe people who sat for years in the heat and the cold and in the snow and meditated. And, you know, I'm sure it could help, but what happens is when this becomes torturing the body, then they say that kind of a path is not good. Even Buddha understood that I am torturing my body, and because ultimately the Lord resides in this body. Our body is a temple, and it has to be used for my own upliftment and for service, you know. So this body is a temple which has to be taken care of. Again, it does not mean that you should not take care of the body, but overindulging the body, where I'm spending all my time in just acquiring, possessing, beautifying, and, you know, plastic surgery and all. Overindulging is not good. And over, you know, to the other extreme, which as Buddha realized that he was extremely doing penance, and then he said, wait a minute, I need to come to a middle path. And so that's what he did. Then for a few years, he had a path of self-control, but not this excessive amount of fasting and all that. And that's when he realized the truth. So they say that giving up things that we love, you know, things, or even like people, like, for example, as I said, a person, a freedom fighter, has to give up his wife and children and has to give up his family to fight for the freedom of the country, or a scientist may not come back from his lab for a week or 2 weeks, or a salesman who has to travel, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So some amount of sacrifice is there. So similarly, in spirituality, we have to give up to some extent things that we love. Not does not mean that it is wrong to love your wife or children and all, but excessive attachment where that's all you're doing. You take care of your wife and children as a duty, but your main goal should be that through this duty I'm evolving, and even my wife or my child or my husband that I'm taking care of, the Lord is in them. I'm serving the Lord. And so constantly remembering the Lord and serving, then even that family duties can become rituals, can become prayer, can become. So talking about loving the family, this two women were talking, and they said, we're talking about their husbands. So one says, you know, my husband is an angel. So the second one says, you're lucky, my husband is still alive. Anyway, I guess that's not love. But anyway, so tapas means sacrifice, giving up what we love for a higher cause. Then comes japa or chanting, and all the scriptures and all the religions place great emphasis on that. Whether you look at Christianity, you look at Islam, look at Sikhism, look at Hinduism, they all place great emphasis on the chanting of the beads. You know, the beads, there are beads in Christianity, people do that in Islam, in Hinduism. So the idea is that through chanting the name of the Lord, it's a very, very powerful exercise. Because what it does is that the thoughts from many come to that one thought, and that is the name of God and His qualities. And the more and more you think about that, and it doesn't matter which form, it doesn't matter which name. It's not that one name is superior to the other, or one mantra is superior to the other, or one form is superior to the other. Whichever form appeals to you, whatever mantra appeals to you, whatever technique or method of prayer or remembering, but just remember the Lord, because remembering the Lord is the best way to purify the mind, and constantly remembering. And of course, when we sit for meditation, we always say, you know, you relax your body, and then you watch your breath, and then you chant. And today we'll practice some chanting of the mantra of Om, and that is wonderful. But also, it should become part of your daily activity. Soon as you wake up in the morning, your first thought should be the chanting of the mantra. It should come automatically, Om Namah Shivaya, or name of the Father and the Son. Whatever, you know, your mantra is, whatever the name of God is, the form and the name should appear as first thing in the morning. You should try to make it a habit. That as soon as I wake up, my first conscious thought, of course, when you immediately wake up, maybe you have a dream or something. But as soon as you are awake and you are with the body, immediately your mind should go to that. And that with practice can happen. You practice that every day, that the first thought I must have is of God. And the name and His, so chanting the mantra. And then secondly, before you go to bed, I've also said that before, is that what one should do is you lie down on the bed flat, relax your body, you know, from head to toe, and then start watching your breath. And as your breath is going in and out, you are chanting the mantra. So what that does, two things. One is it quietens the mind, and a relaxed mind will sleep better. Your sleep will be better. If people have trouble sleeping, I always recommend do that. Just watch your breath and chant the mantra. So from many thoughts, it will come to one thought, and that is the name of God, His form and His qualities. But not only that, the last thought that you have in your mind before you go to sleep plays like a tape recorder in your mind. So you are getting additional benefit that your mind, even subconsciously, that mantra is playing. It's like a tape recorder. So it is a very, very powerful technique to chant the name of the Lord. And chanting can be done loudly. You know, it can be done loudly means where you can hear it, and then we have, as we have talked, or it can be done as a whisper. But the best is to chant in the mind. If you can do that, chanting loudly is easier, because you are bringing your speech in it and also your mind. And if you are using the beads, then that becomes a further support, where with the beads and with the speech and with the mind, all three are engaged in in chanting, and that's why they say use the beads. But as your mind becomes purer and becomes clearer and becomes more focused, then slowly you can drop the beads. You know, you may not need it. But some people keep using the beads even years and after, which is okay. If that helps you to concentrate, there's nothing wrong with that. My father is 87, 88 years old, and he still uses the beads every morning. Half an hour or 1 hour, he'll be chanting the beads, and then he goes into that silence. So it's wonderful. And secondly, you don't need to chant loudly. You can then start chanting in the mind, because when you're chanting in the mind, if you can focus on that, that is the most wonderful technique. And there's a story which quite a few of you may have heard. I'll just tell it very briefly about the power of chanting. There was this dacoit, this criminal who used to rob people. He used to work in a forest that was between two cities, and in those days people used to travel by horse or by on foot or by, you know, wagons, and so he would waylay them, you know, with a gun or with a knife, catch them, rob them of their money, because these were business people going from one. But not only that, he would kill them so that there would be nobody to testify, no witnesses. He didn't want to leave any. So he was living a very horrible life. And it is said one time a monk was passing by, and that time he had not got, that day he had found nobody traveling. So he caught this monk and told him, give me whatever you have. And the monk says, you know, I'm a monk. All I have is a set of clothes and my begging bowl. You can have them, you know. But he says, but what do you do? He said, that's my living. You know, I stay here and I kill people and I steal the money. For whom? He says, for my wife and children. I have to take care of them. They live in the village nearby, about a couple of miles. So the monk says, okay, why don't you do this? You know, go and ask your wife and children if they will be a part of your sin. You know that killing people and stealing is a sin. He says, yeah, but I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for my family. He says, okay, go there and see if they will accept your sin as theirs. You know, if they will share in it. Of course they will. You know, my wife loves me, my children. The monk says, okay, I'll wait here. I won't leave. You can tie me up if you want. So he ties him up to the tree, goes and asks his wife and children, will you participate in my sin? And they said, no, we didn't ask you to kill and murder and loot. You know, it is your duty to take care of us, but you have to do it honestly. If you are a murderer or a thief, sorry, we are not part of that. So he came back and he told the monk, you know, I'm sorry, but I didn't realize that what I'm doing is a sin, and nobody is going to participate in it. I'm bearing the whole load of it. What can I do to get out of it? And he knew that this person is not going to sit and meditate. He's not going to read the books. He's not going to go out and do service. So he said, just sit here and chant the name of the Lord. Don't do anything, just chant. So he gives him Ram, which is the name of God. Ram, Ram, Ram. And he sits there and he gets so engrossed in that. It is said that he stayed in that one spot for years, till actually an ant hill grew around him. The ants came and they found this piece of something they thought was a rock, so they actually built a hill around. That's why his name became Valmiki, which means ant hill. And he stayed there for years. And this monk, of course, had him sit down and took off, you know, wherever he had to go. And a few years later, he was walking on the same path and he remembered, you know, I had this thief, I had given him this mantra, Ram. Let me see what happened to him. And he comes and he sees this ant hill there and he says, what's going on here? And somehow he has an intuition and he starts, you know, separating the ants. And there out of that comes out that dacoit who had now become a great saint. Through the years of just chanting the name of the Lord, all his sins were washed away and he became a great saint. Not only that, but he developed a tremendous knowledge, but he was an uneducated crook. And now he could chant Sanskrit mantras, and he actually wrote the story of Ramayana. Not only the story, but all the teachings of that in Sanskrit, you know, which he had never learned, but from some higher source. And his Sanskrit Valmiki Ramayana is still chanted and studied all over India. So what I'm saying is that the name of the Lord has so much power. It's like a detergent. You just chant it and instantly your mind gets cleaned. Just as putting a Tide in your clothes, the clothes come out white. So that is the glory of chanting the name of the Lord. One must do that. when you're sitting and doing nothing, you know, you're sitting in the doctor's office, doctor is running late. No need to get upset. Just sit, okay, say, okay, he's half an hour late, good, I have half an hour extra to chant the name of the Lord. Take the, or you missed your flight, you know, your flight was late and you missed your connection and I have 6 hours left. That's okay, I have 6 hours to meditate, to chant the name of the Lord. So use any opportunity you get to chant his name. And that is most wonderful. Start the day in the morning and end the day. Teertha or pilgrimage also is a beautiful technique. Some of us had gone to this east to west pilgrimage where we started from east of India, Calcutta, and went all the way to the west, stopping at different places. I think about 18 different places we visited. And it was a very powerful experience because each of these places of pilgrimage, and they don't have to be only Hindu, but like Bethlehem, if you go to Bethlehem, or for Muslims to go to Mecca, or for the Jews to go to Jerusalem. All of these holy places are holy because the Lord or the great saints or prophets or sages lived there. Not only that, but every year so many visitors go there with that holy attitude. You know, a lot of saints and prophets and monks. So in those holy places, a lot of spiritual people have been there. So when I do the pilgrimage, again, it should not be done with the idea of checking off. Okay, you know, it's done. Not like that. Or some people are there, like even in the book, he says, they're just there to take pictures. You know, they're taking pictures of various sites and then they come and make a slideshow and show their, you know, their friends and all, which we also did. But the idea was here was to share with everybody. But the main purpose is to be in the presence of holy people and feel the presence. And actually, it is very interesting. 2-3 places, we had a very great experience. One of the places was in Allahabad, in the center of India, where 3 holy rivers meet. And you go out in a boat and take a dip in that water. And I did not go with any particular feeling that it is anything. You know, I said, okay, everybody comes and takes a bath. Okay, let me also go take a bath. It's supposed to be holy. But it's very interesting when you take a dip in that river at the places where the 3 rivers meet, there is so much energy. You feel so much power. It was like I really had a very strange experience. And it was not that I was expecting anything or planned. It just happened, you know, that there is each time you dip in there, you feel like almost like an electrical current. There was so much energy because that place has been sanctified over thousands of years. You know, different saints and monks have come and dipped in that. And then another place where Krishna lived, I also had that experience. I have been to many religious places and been to many, even Kailash and all. But that particular place, after having spent 2 days, when I got into the bus and I was leaving, I felt that I'm, you know, like a viraha, like a separation, like I'm separating from something special. It was almost, I was sad inside and almost crying. And it has never happened to me before. I've been to so many spirit. So what I'm saying is that these spiritual places have a lot of energy. So visit them. Every opportunity you get, go to these, you know, holy places. And even within our country, there are so many places that are sanctified and that are very spiritual, like this Sedona Mountains. They say that is a place that has a lot of energy and a lot of people go to meditate. So maybe go there and spend a weekend, you know, just sit in silence and meditate. So pilgrimage is another very, very powerful way. So because also if you are in the company of other people who have the same thoughts and the same ideas, then that pilgrimage has even more power, has even more benefit. So doing that, visiting holy places, and again, with the idea that the Lord resides. Actually, the Lord is everywhere. You know, it's not that God is not there he's only in Sedona or he's only in Bethlehem or Mecca. No, God is everywhere. And why do I have to go there, you know, to see him? Or why do we people go to the temples? It's like, you know, the U.S. government is everywhere, right? Where is the U.S. government? It extends from sea to shining sea. You know, they say from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Everywhere the U.S. government exists, from the Rockies all the way down south through the Gulf of Mexico. But if I want to contact the U.S. government, where do I go? I go to Washington, D.C., because that's where the, you know, the government is. If I want to contact the Department of Agriculture, I need a contract. Or if I want to go to the Defense Department or the Department of Treasury, I go to Washington, D.C. If I want to contact the state government, the state of California, where do I go? I go to Sacramento, because that's where the power is. So similarly, these spiritual places, even though God is everywhere, they are the focus where God's presence is felt very strongly. So we can contact him. Ultimately, though, for a wise person, God is everywhere. So he sees God within. And that is the number one pilgrimage, that see God within, constantly remember him. And then vrata or vows are kind of similar to austerity, where you decide that this is what I'm going to do, and then this is where you carry it out. So the way you decide, the decisions that you make, that I'm going to fast, I'm not going to eat my breakfast till I have done 1 hour of meditation, no matter what happens, you know, even if I'm tired, no, I will get up in the morning and do it, I'll fast. And so making a resolve, so that is the first thing, you know, before you can actually practice austerities, in your mind you have to resolve. And so things that we are very comfortable with, you know, because we are so used to comforts. So if something I am so used to doing and I have always enjoyed it and done it, see how it feels to do without it. Okay, today I will not do that. Say, I used to love to eat ice cream. So I say, okay, for 1 year I won't eat ice cream. Like in this pilgrimage, we did that in the Ganga River when we released those flowers. A lot of us gave up. Okay, this thing I enjoy, I'm not going to do for a year. Or some of them gave it up for their whole life. So things that I used to enjoy, do it not out of torture or punishment or persecution. Voluntarily I'm giving that so that I'm developing self-control. So that I may then, my self-control should be directed towards the spirituality. So giving up things that make us comfortable, you know, and maybe, okay, then you say, okay, like from now on, I will not take elevator. I only take stairs. Partly it is good exercise, but as I am walking up the stair, I'll chant the name of the Lord every time, every step I do. So what happens is that the taking the elevator, suppose you have 5 or 6 stairs to climb. A, you get wonderful exercise. And secondly, you are remembering the Lord. So things that make us comfortable, like, you know, okay, I won't take the car, I'll walk. So doing certain amount of self-control so that I can then evolve spiritually. So these 6 things, worshipping the Lord, serving the world, doing charity, developing self-control, practicing austerity, chanting and remembering the name of the Lord, doing pilgrimages and vows. And they should be done with an attitude of humility, because that is another trap, that once I start doing this, then people say, you know, I'm better than that. You know, I have given up all this. And now I, 1 hour every day I meditate. Then we go out publicly and then we, you know, sit somewhere and, oh, we are chanting, so that my neighbor and everybody should see that I am, you know, such a good meditator. So it should not become a technique of show off or and also what happens is sometimes you get arrogance, because with this kind of self-control, you do develop certain powers, you develop certain abilities, you develop certain, you know, even some of these rishis and monks have great powers. And that can also breed arrogance, can breed ego, where I can, you know, do this, I can do that, I am such a great yogi. So it has to be done with the right attitude, and the goal and the purpose should be that through these 6 methods, I'm going to purify my mind. And then what do I do with that pure mind? We'll talk in 2 weeks, actually in 3 weeks. Because the next 2 weeks, because of Christmas, there won't be a class on the 20th or the 27th. So we'll meet on January 3rd. So 2 weeks, please enjoy your vacation and the Christmas time. But the 7th is, according to Swamiji here, is the most important, and that is knowledge. how do I get the right knowledge? So through right knowledge, how I can progress spiritually. So you can, of course, you're welcome to continue to read this book and also read the first 7 verses that we have done in the next 2 or 3 weeks, so that you can refresh the memory. And because the more you read, the more the knowledge becomes firm, and then it becomes clear. And then if we have any doubts, of course, we can answer them here during the class or even afterwards, or in the discussion, they will get answered. So please do that. And we have a few minutes. If anybody has any comments about any of these techniques or any other questions they may have. No, it's not recommended. It's not recommended. You have to pick one name and one favorite form of the Lord. You have to pick a favorite. It's like saying that every week I'm going to be with a different husband. Somebody might say, oh, that's wonderful, but what's wrong with that? But it doesn't work. You have to pick one mantra and pick one form of the Lord. You cannot mix it up. No. Then, because you have to get a deep attachment, you know, become one with that. And that will not happen if you keep switching. Ultimately, even that form disappears, and then you see that one formless oneness, where that form and I become one, and then that formless entity, that's the final experience, the complete merger. But chanting on the name of the Lord and the form, it helps you. It's like a staircase to progress. Yeah, so it has to be fixed. You can't keep changing. And you can think about, you know, the name and the form and the mantra, and then pick that and then stay with it. I mean, it may happen that, you know, you may first maybe pick a mantra and you find that it, you know, you're not progressing or it's not appealing to you. And 6 months or a year later, you may change. That's okay. But you cannot keep doing that every month or every. Right. No. It has to be the same. Because I used to chant the Gayatri Mantra for quite a few years, and that was very good because that helped me to develop my power of memory and memorization and the mantras and all. But then I found that it was good, but then just chanting the one name of God and shortened was better for me. So, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So what we do is, will be doing it today also, is that you sit down, you close your eyes, and then you relax your body from head to toe, and then you observe your breath. And then after observing your breath, you start chanting the mantra. And initially you do it loudly, and then you do it softly, like a whisper, and then ultimately chant in the mind. And one of the very important techniques which has helped me a lot in meditation is what is said in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It says, Atma samstham mana kritva na kinchit api chintaye. Center the mind in the self. So, well, what do you mean center the mind in the self? Am I and the mind and self is not one? No. The mind is the mind and intellect are the thinking capabilities. The self is the Lord's presence. So by chanting of the mantra and observing the breath, when the mind becomes quiet, then you center the mind and focus it upon the Lord's presence. And once that mind is centered in that silence, then you don't think anything. Then you don't say, I am a meditator, I am meditating, I am now turning the mind's attention to the Lord, and I am not. No, that I has to disappear. Na kinchit api chintaye. Don't think anything. Don't even think that you are meditating or you are a meditator or that I am meditating upon something or the Lord. So center the mind in on the self and then do not think anything. And just stay in that silence. And I find that has helped me a lot. I mostly practice that, where after having, you know, chanted and relaxed the body and walked the breath, I used to take longer. Now I'm able to expedite that because I've been meditating for many years. So I don't need to spend too much time and all that. But then I center. And then what happens is the mind stays in that self and you feel good for a while. You feel a lot of peace and almost joy. And then the mind again runs into the whatever I'm going to do today or whatever happened yesterday or he said, she said. And then you have to be very alert. And then you say, oh my God, I was chanting and I was meditating. What happened? So then you bring the mind back and then again you stay in that self. So through practice in the Gita, in the sixth chapter, actually sixth chapter of the Gita, everybody should read, because the technique of meditation, the goal of meditation, the purpose of meditation, everything is described so beautifully and clearly in one small little text. And then it says there, as whenever the mind wanders, just bring it back. You don't have to be upset. Don't have to get angry with yourself. Don't have to get angry with the mind. You say, okay, mind, it's not the time to think about work. It's not the time to think about family or children. It's not the time to think about anything. It is the time to be with the self. And so center the mind on the self and try not to think anything. Because even to think that I am meditating is also a disturbance. Ultimately, even that thought should go away, and only that silence, and ultimately then the self becomes that alone exists. So practice that and you'll find that that will help you a lot. That particular verse I always have memorized, and I use that. Atma samstam mana kritva na kinchit api chintayet. Center the mind on the self and think of nothing else. But you cannot just sit down and say, okay, I'm going to think about the self. You first have to follow the technique. You have to relax the body. You have to watch your breath. And then slowly you have to watch the thoughts in the mind. And then slowly, slowly when the mind becomes quiet, through chanting of the name of the Lord, then you center that. So it is a stepwise process, and then do that. And that will help. And then slowly, slowly, the mind will stay quiet for more longer periods and the running will become less and you'll become more aware. So Swami Chinmayananda used to say, be awake, alert and vigilant. Awake means you should not be asleep. Alert means you should watch the mind, center it, and then be vigilant that if the mind is trying to run away, bring it back. Run away, bring it back. And without getting angry or frustrated or upset and all, just say, okay, it's the nature of the mind to run. But my job is to keep the mind under check. So I find that helps. You can practice that. It will be very good. Center the mind on the self and think of nothing else. Yes?
So are you saying that if there's a moment where I think showering and raise a bit, you know, lay down and turn the lights off, can you chant yourself to sleep?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You relax your body and then you watch your breath and then keep on chanting. And the mind will be quiet and you'll fall off to sleep much better. And if it doesn't happen, it's okay too, you know. But the point is that you should try as much as possible to think of the Lord. And the night time is the best. And the first thing in the morning, try to make it a habit. It's very beautiful, very powerful. Yes, you can chant anytime. You can sit in the, like I said, you're sitting in the doctor's office, or suppose you show up in a restaurant and your person was supposed to meet you for lunch and they came 20 minutes late. In the past, I used to get very upset. You know, I am waiting and I'm checking the menu now. You know, and then the waitress is bringing water and, you know, but now you can say, it's okay, he's not here, that's fine, I'll just chant. So you can chant the name of the Lord anytime you have a spare minute. There's nothing wrong with that. Or even in the middle of the day on your lunch break, you know, you have had a very stressful day. Just sit after you finished your lunch. Okay, I still have 10 minutes to go back to work. I just sit in one corner, just close my eyes, watch my breath and chant the mantra. So it's a very powerful means. It's very wonderful. The more you do it, the more you'll enjoy that. Take every opportunity to do that.